Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, it's another week of Comics Talk Comedy and another week where I'm by myself this week. Probably not for the whole show. I'm supposed to have a guest coming in studio. He said he hit some traffic. You know, those one o'clock on a Saturday traffic that happens all in San Diego. No, I don't know. Well, a little bit about my week. What did I do? Wednesday, I did the Comedy Store, and that was decent, I think. Yeah, it started off a little slow, but then the crowd got into it. Last night was Winston's, and it was pretty dead. It was pretty slow. There was people there at the start. It's probably about 20 people when I got there, but by the time the headliners went up there, there's about 5 people. And the headliners were Matt Lockwood and Ahsan Ahmad. Matt did okay, and then Ahsan basically just talked to some dude that said he wasn't a heckler but didn't realize what heckling means, so he basically heckled the entire time, but Ahsan did basically talk to him too, so I don't know where you, what you go with that. As far as comedy, our guest is John O'Zalay. We'll get his story when he comes in, or if he comes in, otherwise I'll just ramble for an hour. I don't know how talk show hosts do this, just talk to themselves the entire time. I don't think that would be very fun. I don't know what to say or if this is entertaining or not. What about, we got Christmas season coming up. The only show in town on Christmas Eve is at the Comedy Store, so you should go and support live comedy. That was that. I was supposed to go home to my now ex-girlfriend's house for Christmas, but she broke up with me, which is fine because she's insane. But that's all right, you know. Insane people need love as well. So there I am, admitting that I dated a crazy person. I'm probably crazy myself. But, you know, that's just how life is. What else did I do? I went to the gym this week. Who else went to the gym? You know what I like about the gym is that you can go and you can you can work out, and that's fun. You know, you get to sweat, and then you go home. Well, sometimes you shower. I like to shower at the gym, which can be weird sometimes, I guess, because a lot of people like to talk to you while you're in a towel, and it's just not very comfortable. It's just not really my thing. So I just don't like, really, I mean, in general, I don't like to talk to people. I mean, let's be real. It's not the best thing. I mean, people, they're not great. But, yeah, you know, you gotta talk to them at times. Yeah, that's what I do. And then I shower. A good shower. I like to lather up with the free soap and, get it all over. And, you know, hose off, as the kids would say. I don't know if the kids say that, but, what else did I do this week? Oh, I bought Christmas presents for a girl that, you know, she ended it. So now I have, Christmas presents if anyone needs a Christmas gift. Just please let me know. Otherwise, I'll just burn them or throw them over the corner on a bridge. So if anyone's interested in a candle or a lotion set, just hit me up on Instagram. I'm not on Instagram, but if you'd like to hit me up there, that'd be kind of you. So what else is going on? This is very strange. I should have brought a newspaper or something to read so I could pick up the top stories. A big story this week in the world of comedy movies is the interview got canceled because Sony was afraid that North Korea was going to attack the theaters. But North Korea said that they didn't do that and that now the U.S. should watch out. So they're all set attacking the U.S. if the rumors are not true. No, wait, I don't know how that works, but basically, North Korea is crazy. We don't get a big North Korean following on our show. I don't think anyone, listens from North Korea, but, if they do, I'm just kidding. I think North Korea is a great, great, what is it, country? Town? I'm not really sure. I think it's a country. So yeah, you're good people and we love you here at Comics Talk Comedy. As you can see that Jesse's not in studio. He's back home, Washington, I think. Yeah, I think he lives in Washington. He's with his parents. He's nursing, cold, I think, cause it's very cold over there. So he's doing that. What else is going on in the world of comedy? Oh, the comedy competition is really heating up. I think they're in the, about the 39th first round. I think there's 50 first rounds this time in the Madhouse comedy competition. So it's going to be coming down. I think there was 642 people in the contest. and that's hosted and judged by Dave Callens and Cameron Dyson, I believe. Cameron Dyson no longer works at the Comedy Store. He quit to pursue his dreams of doing comedy elsewhere. What else is going on? The Comedy Store did hire a couple of new people, Hassan Ahmad and Dante Cordova, because we needed two ethnic people to work there. Once Chip got fired and Cameron left. Well, I guess Cameron's white. I'm not really sure what he is. Maybe he's Russian. I'm not really positive. But, yeah, so comedy. I've been just haven't been doing much comedy. My writing is just, I don't think I've written a good joke in about a year. So that feels good, you know, just doing my same crap. It's not great, but, sometimes it's okay. You know, it's fun. I did get a lady a few weeks back from a show. That was pretty cool. I don't know if I've talked about it already, but, she was a black lady. As many of you know, that is kind of my expertise. What I'm good at, is getting black women to find my charm and elusiveness. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing. If anyone wants to learn how to date black chicks, I'm going to be teaching a seminar at Comedy Heights, outside of Comedy Heights, tonight. So just go ahead and meet me there. And it's how to pick up black women. And it's a riveting class. I'm thinking about doing it twice a week just to help out. Because I think a lot of people would like to know, to experience, you know, the sultry fineness of a black woman, and I will teach you how to do that, and I think that will be great. It's basically part of my community service that I had to do, but I am willing to help out those in need. All right, what else is there to talk about? Well, right now I'm in studio. It's 1:07 on a Saturday. Let's check the traffic. Let's go to Darlene on traffic. I don't know what to do. I think the guest is here. He could be here, or maybe it's just my hope that he's here so I don't have to keep talking to myself. But we will see if Jono is here. Otherwise, I'm going to go ahead and check my email. Yep, looks like he is here, so we will have a better show coming your way in about 30 seconds. It looks like he's coming in. He's got water and what I believe is coffee. And we got Jono. He's going to silence his phone and maybe get him on the mic. Let's see if we can get him on the mic. Jono, are you here?
I am. Hello.
Hey, he's here. He made it. Thank you. Thank you. A little bit of traffic?
Yeah. I forget when you drive places, there you have to fight with other people doing the same thing.
Yeah. Where did you come from?
Point Loma.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does your family live there?
They do.
Yes. So did you start comedy in San Diego?
I did, yeah. I right after, actually, my first open mic, I think, was in somewhere like 2002.
Okay.
I was in college at Santa Barbara, and then I, like, would come home for the summers, and then that's when I found out they had an open mic at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, and so I signed up the next week. And then I did a couple times that summer, and then I didn't really do anything, because there's no real comedy avenues in Santa Barbara when I was going there, at least. And so I just waited till after college was done, and I started back up doing open mics after college around December 2004 to January 2005.
Okay, so you've been doing it almost 10 years now.
Yeah, basically right around 10 years.
Yeah.
Oh boy,
so you did it! Why, oh
thank
boy!
Thank you for reminding me.
Why, oh boy!
I don't know. It's kind of a big milestone, but also like good indicator. Like just like whoa, you're kind of in this for the
pretty deep.
Pretty deep. You better have something to show for it.
Do you feel you have anything to show for it?
I do. Nothing like major credit wise or anything like that, but like I am ingrained in the, I guess you call it scene enough where I feel like I've, earned a place in stand up comedy and.
Well, it seems like you can get booked on both coasts, huh? I think you have shows in LA and New York and Boston.
Yeah.
And here.
Absolutely.
And that was just from meeting people or?
Yeah, I mean, I moved to Boston, to go to grad school in like 2006, after about a year and a half doing it here in San Diego. And I was there for 6 years and, just worked on doing stand up whenever I could and sort of developed into the comic. I don't know. Like that's where I I would consider myself a Boston comic more than like San Diego or New York, even though I started in San Diego and I'm currently in New York.
Is the Boston scene bigger than San Diego?
Yes. I mean, the San Diego scene has become bigger since I left, which is both great and frustrating at the same time. I wish it was bigger when I first was here, but there was not as much stage time. But yeah, I mean, like it's probably a little more comparable now because there's like a few clubs in Boston. There's a few clubs in San Diego and there's a lot of opportunity to get on stage every night if you want to in both cities.
Right.
I think Boston, because they have like the history of stand-up comedy, more so than San Diego, they're probably a bigger and better scene in that respect, but otherwise they're pretty comparable.
Were you making money doing comedy back then?
Yeah, here and there. I mean, I haven't really been making money. Some say you never really make money in stand-up. But I mean, like, yeah, it would just get progressively more each year, just picking up more and more paid gigs out of Boston. Like, there's a lot of, you know, road work in New England. There are a lot of one-nighters and stuff. So you pick up stuff like that. Nothing to, like, live off of, per se, but... And even in New York, there's not like a ton of paid work. You have to kind of go on the road to do it.
Okay.
I Boston and New York are my two, cause I've been in New York for about 2.5 years. And then
what made you decide that it's time to go to New York?
Well, I finished grad school in Boston and
we've got 30 seconds.
Oh, okay. I've heard Boston described by a few people. My friend calls it comedy North Korea, where you gotta escape when you can.
Okay.
So, like, if you don't escape after a certain point in Boston, you're just there forever.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the same thing with San Diego.
Yeah, so you wanna get out when you can.
All right. Gonna take a break. We got more with Jono coming back. You're listening to Joby's Radio. Bye.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Second segment. Jono's still here. He didn't have to leave. See, in the break, you were kind of talking about you do a podcast.
Oh yes, it's called Universe City. I recorded out of New York with two of my friends, Joe Zimmerman and Raj Sivaraman, and it is a science and comedy podcast. So it's like a funny radio lab where we take an issue or scientific paper, something in the news about science, and then we make jokes about it.
Do they have a science background as well?
Yes. Both Raj and I have a PhD. His is in molecular biology, mine's in neuroscience. And then Joe, it was actually his idea to start it. He just loves science and wanted to talk about it all the time with his two most scientific friends.
Okay.
So we just were like, yeah, of course we want to talk about science and make jokes.
Yeah. While you were studying, what was it that you got a PhD in?
Neuroscience.
Neuroscience.
Nerdoscience is what I say.
Did you... plan to use it?
Not really. I mean, like, I went to, like, I had started comedy before I applied to grad school, and I, not that I didn't love science. That was my background in undergrad college, you know, Santa Barbara, where I went, was biopsychology, and I was like, maybe I'll go to grad school. So I hated my job. I was working at a biotech company, and it was boring, and I was like, you know, research would be a lot more fun than this. So I went into that, but I'd also started comedy, and I was really interested in it. So I applied to graduate schools in cities where I could do comedy concurrently.
Oh, all right.
So it was kind of a dual purpose. And I was just, you know, like, I'm going to do both of these until one of them pans out.
Okay.
And I deep down hoped that comedy would, and it kind of did. So
yeah. How did your parents feel about that?
They're still coming to terms with it. I mean, nothing shuts them up like having a PhD.
Yeah.
That was like, hey, take it easy. All right. I spent 6 years of grad school and I'm technically a doctor, so you can't really tell me what to do. But like, they're supportive of my career, but like my mom would definitely prefer I go back into science.
Right.
And I teach a little bit on the side as well. So it's not like I've abandoned academia entirely.
Okay.
Just clinging to the bottom rung.
Yeah.
My dad just is a fan of comedy, so he doesn't care.
Yeah, he's all right. How was that first year weather-wise being in Boston?
Oh, man. Actually, the first winter wasn't terrible, but I definitely didn't know how to dress for the cold.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have any, like, winter boots or winter coats. So I just had to, like, layer up and throw on, like, four pairs of socks and three sweaters and a snowboarding shell jacket. But I eventually figured out, and they're brutal. That's one of the reasons I come out here every winter for like a month.
Right.
Is because I'm just avoiding the winters for as long as I can.
Yeah, that's the main reason that I haven't made my way to New York is that the weather. You know, I grew up in the East Coast. I grew up in Maine. So,
oh, no way.
Yeah. So I'm familiar with Boston and all that stuff. But
sure.
Yeah, I just can't bring myself to. I mean, have you gotten used to it?
Yeah, I mean, as much as you can, I guess. Like, I'm not surprised by it, and it's not. You find ways to make it worthwhile. New York's cool because, like, you don't necessarily have to drive everywhere, and like subways can run underground where there's no snow.
Right.
I find actually the summer to be a little bit more unbearable than the winter because, like, winter you can throw on enough coats and weatherproof gear to make it.
Yeah.
But like in the summer when it's super humid and 95 degrees and it's just 100% humidity.
Yeah.
You just want to tear off your skin.
Oh yeah, I know that.
Yeah. So I try to come out to the West Coast then too. I'm very, I try to be more bi-coastal during those harsh weather times.
Yeah.
Very pampered. Spoiled by San Diego. I grew up here and I only want good weather.
Right. Yeah, we went, we did like a little East Coast tour during the summer and we lucked out. It actually wasn't extremely hot. The one day we were in New York though, it rained like crazy.
Yeah.
Like it's already tough, as you know, to drive in New York. Do you have a car out there or no?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So we were driving like this giant van in the downpouring rain, and it was a little dicey.
Driving in New York is just a nightmare when it's nice out.
Yeah.
So when the weather is crazy, there's no sense of it.
Do you drive in Boston?
No. I mean, I had friends that would. Like, they have public transportation there as well. But, like, actually my favorite thing, which they also have in New York but is not as good, is this bike share program. I think they might be bringing it to San Diego. I think I saw a few docks downtown in the gas lamp.
Yeah, I've seen it,
The bike share... It was the best way to get around Boston.
Okay.
You just like check out a bike, take it to another station, leave it there. One way biking. It's the way to go. It's the way of the future.
Yeah. That's the new wave.
Well, it can also because Boston's streets don't make sense.
Okay.
Like it's just not quick to get around Boston.
All right. A lot of one ways and stuff.
Yeah. Like and then they're all squirrely and like there's no grid. It's very stupid the way that they design the city, but it's like the oldest city. So
it
kind of makes sense why they just paved a road where they just could rather than planning it out.
So did you save up some money before you went to New York?
I did. The good thing about doctoral programs for science is that they pay you.
Okay.
Like, so I didn't have to go into debt to like get my PhD or anything.
Well, that's good.
Which was awesome.
Yeah.
And also during that time, I was an RA in the dorms for a couple years. So I was getting paid and on top of that had zero expenses because like room and board was covered.
Mm-hmm.
So I saved up a good amount of money and then I moved to New York and squandered it all in the first year.
How much was it?
Like $25,000.
Oh, because did you not get a job?
I didn't, and I kind of like gave myself a cushion to not have a job to just like go full steam into comedy, and like that was pretty dumb, because like comedy, I was gonna do it anyway, even if I had a job. So it's not like I did extra by not having a job during the day. I mean, like maybe send out a few more avails or something like that, but I mean, it was good to have that cushion for sure, but I probably should have gotten a job, like other jobs sooner, like to have that pressure to like keep it on so I could have a nice little backup cushion.
Was it tough to find a place to live?
No, actually it would have been, but like actually knowing comics that are already in a city that are moving to helps a ton because they know who's moving where and whatnot. So like I had a few friends that I could have moved in with, but they were not ideal situations. But the one I ended up choosing, was my friend Jesse, who at the time was going through a divorce. And that was like his, you know, married home. And it was very nice and very spacious and a very cool part of, Astoria, Queens.
Okay.
And, he didn't like, because he just needed someone to fill something and pay some of the rent. He said like, here, how much can you afford? And I was like, I can pay, you know, this much. And he was like, deal, come in, move in.
Okay.
And so everything was set up. It was already fully furnished, really nice place in a guy. It is a comic that I used to open for on the road. Like, so we're good friends already. So it was pretty ideal in the sense that I had a comic I knew and liked and respected and vice versa. And then so we cohabitated and, you know, now we're a better pair than him and his wife ever were.
Well, that's good.
Taking shots at her.
And you still live there or no?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you said kind of in the break that you kind of have a rotating, a lot of comics staying there.
Yeah. Well, he gets a lot of jobs out in L.A. writing for the television.
Mm.
So he'll be gone for 5 months at a time, in which case I will, like, reach out to other comics to see, like, if someone's moving to New York, maybe they need a sublease for a place for a few months before they find a permanent home, that kind of thing, or between places. There's always comics shuffling in and around different cities, because they travel so much, and I've never not filled up his room or my room when I'm gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that makes it easier to go on the road. Because
absolutely. Yeah. I'm not paying my rent right now because two other comics who are in New York are paying my rent.
Okay. So when you went to New York, you weren't really starting over because you had a good amount of people you knew?
Yeah. And also when I lived in Boston, which is only 4 hours away from New York, I would, the last couple years I was in Boston, I would make a point to go down to New York every couple months and do shows to like sort of meet people because I'd sort of planned on moving there.
Okay.
While I was in Boston. Yeah, it's, yeah.
So you never have to really go grind the open mic scene?
I did, but like in addition to already knowing a lot of people, and plus there's a lot of people that moved there from Boston. So like I knew a good amount of people in other places as well as visiting.
Right.
So it definitely helped the transition. So I do definitely, you know, sympathize with people that move there knowing no one and having to showcase their A material at open mics for several months until people know and respect them.
Right.
But I was, you know, being so close in Boston, I had already kind of made that headway.
Mm-hmm. So you feel like you're, I mean, what's a typical week for you in New York?
As far as shows?
Yeah.
I average about a show a night. Sometimes it'll be two or three one night and then not other ones, but,
are these paid shows?
Often not, but like the clubs pay, like, I work at Caroline's that pays. And then most of the other ones are bar shows, indie shows, backroom stuff. You get drink tickets. It's not nothing.
Yeah, it's nothing. It's more than most shows pay here.
Yeah, exactly. So I, get a nice couple of free beers and stuff or food. And then like I'll do one or two open mics. I used to do like an open mic every night and whatever show I could get. But now I don't do as open mics as much.
Do you feel you get anything out of doing open mics out front of other comics? At this point, after doing it?
Yes and no. Like, there's definitely, like, you have to have a specific goal in mind. I basically go to an open mic when I know I have specifically something to work out.
Okay.
Like a new joke or a new angle or whatever, a new tag. And I try to go to a place where you have to also not just go to any open mic. You have to go to one where you feel like you will get a legitimate feedback. Because there's so many open mics in New York that are just absolutely terrible and kind of a waste of time.
Yeah.
And you just, by being there enough, you know which the ones to avoid and which the ones to seek out. And I usually go to ones where like I know and respect other comics. It's almost more like a workshop than, I used to run an open mic that like I now would go back to because I know and trust all the comics that are there.
Okay.
And they'll give legitimate feedback and listen rather than just type text into their phone or look at their own jokes as you're talking.
Yeah. How was running your own show?
The open mic was fine. It was fun. It was actually a good exercise because I'm very joke based. I never really riff that often. So it was a good way to practice going up there without any material and try to be funny and riff and be off the cup and just
talk.
What's
a different skill to be able to host?
Exactly. And I hate hosting. I have very low energy. So I do that. And then I also like host a regular showcase show, like not open mic.
You still do a show now?
Yes.
And now that what?
It's every Wednesday at like a bar in New York, and it's fun, like to get people back out there.
Well, that's good. People are good.
Yeah, these people are the best at it.
It's good to have people. All right, we got more coming back in 3 minutes. You're listening to WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader in internet talk. Be back in three. Bye.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Third segment. Before you got in, I was kind of talking about how the Madhouse is having San Diego's Funniest Person Contest. Do they have anything like that in New York?
Yes. I think every city has that, actually.
Okay.
They do have a New York's Funniest Person. It's usually run through a club, not a conglomerate of, like, the entire city's clubs or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's just, like, a more mainstream club within a city will run those kind of things. But Caroline's runs the New York's Funniest Person Contest, and they kind of partner with the New York Comedy Festival,
okay,
which like Comedy Central is part of and stuff.
Right. Wasn't it just out there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in early November.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so like I was like lucky enough to like get in with Caroline's pretty early when I moved there, like I'll, you know, be part of the New York's Funniest Person Contest. What's so funny about that specifically being in New York is the best comics in the world live in New York.
Right.
And yet they're not even part. They would never associate themselves with a New York's funniest person contest.
Like, Jerry Seinfeld doesn't do that.
No. Lucy K is not dropping in and doing and winning that every single year. Like, or Dave Attell.
Yeah.
It's great.
So it's mostly this like C-list comedians.
Yeah, it's people like, oh, you'll have maybe one TV credit or something like that, and you're not too big to do this dumb contest.
Right.
It's fun. Like, I get it. It's a way to like showcase up and coming comics in front of industry, and then eventually Comedy Central when they come through.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, contests are like a weird double edged sword. Like, I feel like they're almost a necessary evil. We're like, comedy is an art form, should be like, you know, quantified, et cetera. But it is like an event
mm-hmm.
of sorts, like to get you in front of like club bookers and agents and managers and stuff like that. The reason I got in with Caroline's initially was they have this March Madness contest every year where they have like 64 comics compete head to head.
Right.
In, you know, March Madness style brackets, and they narrow it down to a final four and stuff. And I did pretty well in those. Like just a competition, and I don't like, you know, going specifically head to head against another comic,
yeah.
saying like, I'm funnier than you, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But it was a way to get in with Caroline's, and so it was kind of fun to, or advantageous at least, to be seen by them.
Right. And how is it judged? Is it audience? Judges?
No, it's usually some bookers and industry people in the back. I mean, they do factor in how well you're doing with the audience.
Right. But the audience isn't voting.
Yeah. Okay. If it was, it would be like a total sham, like people just bringing their friends and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's normally how it is here until like the finals. Usually the finals, usually it's whoever like the best is. But,
right.
You know, there's obviously when the audience is voting, it does change it a lot.
Actually, the best argument I've heard for doing these contests and like festivals and stuff like that is from this guy, Ira Proctor, who talked about it's a way to get your nerves up without any real stakes. Like, it's kind of like a practice for when you'll actually need to, like, be nervous in front of an actual industry rather than just, like, some local booker who's judging you for your stage presence. Like, when you're auditioning for television later in your career, you don't want it to be the first time you were actually nervous.
Yeah.
You want to, like, be able to practice calming those nerves and performing and rising to that level of, you know, performance when there's very, like, relatively low stakes. Like, no one cares if you lost a contest. I've lost like a dozen.
Right.
But, you know, when, like, next time you go up in front of a TV booker, you're like, oh, yeah, I've been in this situation before where I, you know, I got some butterflies, but I can, you know.
So you say you're in it at Caroline's. How do you get in at the other clubs?
It's a combination of multiple things. Like, a lot of people will come up through their sort of bringer system, like for years of like doing open mics and bringing people to the club on their amateur hour things. I moved to New York, you know, 8 or so years into comedy. So I was not going to do that.
Okay.
So in the way that people like me who are already professional, but not, and not willing to do the open mic bringer stuff, you have to like, kind of hang out, get recommendations from other comics and maybe other bookers, be seen by them somewhere else oftentimes. Like, they have other bookers come to like the Caroline's contest to help judge. Yeah. So you kind of have to be brought in, and like a lot of it is also just hanging out still. Like, just if you have a little time after one set, go hang out at this club. It's fun. Just hang out at the bar, show your face. So you're dedicated to your craft, and that's club specifically that you care about it and stuff. So,
is there a club that you want to get into next?
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm kind of getting into Stand Up New York and The Stand. Like, I've done spots there. Those are awesome clubs. Actually, I do the podcast I record is with Stand Up New York Labs. So I run a podcast with them. That helps as well.
Yeah.
The people that run the club see your humor on a weekly basis in the podcast form.
What do you do when you're away? Do you call, do it over the phone, or you just don't do it?
Oh, we pre-recorded a ton of them.
Oh,
so when I'm on, we could do it where I Skype in, if I'm on the road, but we had enough foresight to know that we'd be gone over the holidays. Each of us wouldn't necessarily be around to record podcasts. So we, you know, pre-recorded them. So we just released what we've already recorded.
Okay.
Science moves so slowly that oftentimes we don't need to stay up on like the week to week science stories.
So you big into the Big Bang Theory?
Oh God, no.
Not a fan of that show.
No, I've only seen like, I want to say like maybe a full episode over the, like seeing like bits and pieces of episode. It just doesn't, it just seems so tame.
Yeah. I don't know. I saw a few episodes because I had an ex-girlfriend that liked it, but I hate all those like laugh track shows. I just,
it's such a weird antiquated form of sitcom. And also like, I feel like it's capitalizing on like, isn't it cool to be a nerd?
Yeah.
And like, like I was a scientific researcher for a while. It wasn't that fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll probably, you know, like I enjoy like science and humor combined. That's what my podcast is all about.
Okay.
We make nerdy jokes, but we don't like, they somehow make it accessible to like your mom.
Yeah.
I don't want my mom to laugh at my jokes.
No.
I mean, I don't not want her to, but that's not my target demographic either.
Moms?
Yeah.
You're not shooting for moms?
Your aunt shouldn't recommend a sitcom about science to you.
All right. So you said you're going to be going on the road in January?
Yeah. I'll be in the Midwest. I'll be in Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio.
And how'd you get that?
There's a various comedy festival showcasing, and this particular run, most of the I know a couple headliners that are going to go on the road, and they bring me as their feature act.
Okay.
So like that's one of the good ways of getting booked on the road, is like knowing someone that's headlining, and it's like, oh, I know and trust this person to open for me, and this club is fine with them already. Like I was already passed, quote unquote, passed by these clubs.
Okay.
And I just was sending them avails and like, here's if you guys need a feature, but like so many headliners bring their own features anyway, you kind of just have to find a headliner to bring you.
Yeah. Is that people you get in contact with that live in New York?
Or LA. Like the guy I'm going on the road with in January is out of LA.
Okay. And you just met him or he's seen you perform or something?
Both. Yeah. I mean, like we'd known each other for a few years, just doing comedy festivals and, things of that nature, doing shows. When I go to LA a couple months a year.
Okay.
And he lives out in LA and he visits New York as well. So we just, it's weird. Like at this point in 10 years in, I probably know at least one comic in every like major city.
Okay.
Just cause like, you know, they'll come to the Boston Comedy Festival where I'm doing and like they go back to Minneapolis or Austin or wherever.
Right.
Or like I'll, you know, go to the Seattle contest and they'll, it just kind of, it's like a big tree of people that have network of comics that you know at every part of the country. So
yeah.
Like I, not only do I do shows in those parts of the country when I go through, but I also crash on the couches on off nights when like the club doesn't put you up at a hotel and you have a few nights in between clubs. So it's cool.
What's normal pay for a feature?
$100 a set. So like for like a weekend, it does like one show Thursday, two Friday, two Saturday, you got $500.
Okay. So is it, do you sell merch?
No.
I don't
want to like, it's not that I wouldn't. It's just I have nothing to, like, I'm not going to bring t-shirts with me. I don't have a catchphrase or a slogan that I could necessarily put on a t-shirt. Plus, lugging around t-shirts would seem like a nightmare, especially when I don't have a car that I'm driving with.
Well, one thing that we had a guest, I don't know if you know, who was it that I had on? John Toll,
yeah. Toll, okay, yeah.
We had him on, and he told us a story about a guy that he worked with who would just go into Walmart and see like a Who Farted shirt. And then he would just buy all of them and then make his closer with that line, Who Farted?
That's so funny.
And then just sell all those shirts.
I weirdly respect that.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm all in favor of, like, finding a way to make money on the road because it is so hard. Like, it's like, even with just featuring on weekends, like, you're breaking even.
Yeah.
When you go on the road like that. So if you can find a way to, like, sell whatever you want, go for it.
Right.
Yeah. Like I would never disparage people selling merch because that's definitely a way to make money. I have a friend who sells fire wallets, those wire wallets that like have a little spark and they like catch on fire and close them. It has very little to do with comedy, but he's written like 10, 15 minutes around that fire wallet.
Yeah.
And boy, does he sell a shitload of them.
Yeah.
Can I use the?
Well, we've had Patrick DeGeer on. He said selling his shirts bought his house.
Oh, probably, yeah.
So
his Canadian family, Mexican family shirts.
Yeah, yeah. So he said, I mean, what about a CD? Have you ever recorded a CD?
I have not. I would think about it. I have enough, like, quote unquote, material to put onto a CD. I just haven't had a reason to do it. I go on the road a couple months a year, but never enough to justify, like, oh, I need to sell something.
Right.
And I kind of would need a reason to really put an album together, like, I don't know, promoting it on a television show or something like that.
But. Yeah, I think it's hard. Like, I've recorded a CD, but I don't really do anything with it because most of my sets are like 8 to 10 minutes and there's a bunch of other comics. And I think, would it be weird for you to sell merch in the feature spot?
People do.
Okay.
But like, I mean, until I'm really start headlining, there's no reason that I necessarily need to sell a CD or whatever. And like, a lot of it is, actually, it's easier now to sell CDs because there's online on like Netflix. People sell those like little download cards.
Okay.
On like, those are like, hey, download my CD with this code and it's free. And you sell those little postcards for $10.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I know people do that. And I would think about it in the future, but no real immediate plans.
You wouldn't do a shirt?
Well, like I said, I don't want to carry it around.
Okay. Don't like to work, is basically.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we got one more segment coming back. You're listening to WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader in the talk. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Bye.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we're back. Last segment. So we were talking around the break that you said, like, even if you break even, it's kind of a good experience for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I've gone on the road for, you know, a month at a time doing club work the whole way through and still not coming out on top just because all the flights and the hotels and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Travel expenses kind of eat into your profit, especially as a feature act, because you're not making a ton.
Right.
But it is a good way to build relationships, meet other comics, get in with the clubs, and also, like, you'd get seen by people. Like I was in, like Vancouver last May and like happened to be at a club at the same time as, Thomas Lennon, who's, from Reno 911. Mm-hmm. You know, Lieutenant Dangle.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, like, so he is like, then he was at the club and he enjoyed my set. So we talked afterward and like, he has, you know, he's a big, as much as he is like, has a little, you know, good comedy acting resume on like Reno 911, the state, and all that stuff. He like also created At Midnight,
okay,
the TV show. So like it's in like more, the more people you know in those positions of power in like Hollywood or in showbiz, like I'm submitting a writing packet for At Midnight like next week. So like if he is part of that selection process and he already knows me as a stand up,
right?
That's only going to help.
Yeah.
So yeah, like those kind of like just like I could like draw a direct correlation between like shows that I've gone out and done and met people and like other things I've gotten out of it.
Okay.
Versus with staying in New York, which is great. Like people can stay in New York as long as they want because thankfully industry comes to New York to check out talent. But like the more you kind of go and explore, the more opportunities you'll be open to.
Okay. So you're looking to get into like acting, like when you go into LA, you're trying to do pilot season?
Absolutely not.
No?
I'm not, it's not in my skill set nor desire. Like I'm awkward on camera in general.
Okay.
I wouldn't not do it, but it's not like something I have the drive for, which I feel like you kind of need.
Right.
So like, there's probably going to be a comic or actor who's like, not only, funny and good on stage, but also really wants to get on camera and really attack that stage. And like, I'm on a sitcom now. It's like, I'm just way too low energy I prefer like in stand up, I prefer the writing element to the performance. Like the performance I love, obviously it's good feedback, but it's mostly just feedback of, oh, they like my ideas. I don't care if they like my stage persona as much as they like think that what I think is funny.
Right.
So I'm much more well suited for like a writer's room.
All right.
Which is what I like, one of the other avenues I'm pursuing.
So you're doing a lot of, what's included in a writing packet?
It depends on the show that, you're submitting to. But yeah, usually there's, for your general late night show, there'll be some monologue jokes, like straight up set up punchline, like topical, like, hey, take some news stories from the last week and write, 20 jokes about it.
Yeah.
Plus desk bits, was it Jimmy Fallon's thank you notes?
Okay.
Those kind of things, like write some thank you notes and or come up with ideas for new angles on for desk bits. And then there'll be like field pieces where like they like man on the street, what would this talk show host do that would be funny? And then there's also just straight up sketch packets, which is just write a comedy sketch.
Right. Yeah, I did a packet once for a show out here that's since been canceled, but what was it? The hardest thing for me to write was monologue jokes.
Mm.
I don't know if you those came easily for
Opposite.
You.
Opposite, yeah. I love just straight up jokes. Sketches a little bit more difficult. Like I have ideas for sketches more than I have like the background of like I've never taken a sketch writing class. And I feel like I eventually will just because there is like sort of a formula to them where like you have to keep same with thing with script writing mm-hmm. where like you have to have this arc meet that arc and character and blah, blah, blah story.
Yeah.
But I just like jokes and write them more proficiently than sketches.
Right. I just felt with monologue jokes who are just kind of, cause they're trying to be corny.
So a little bit.
For me, it was just tough to kind of write that style of joke, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely like I would never like only rarely will I incorporate a joke I would have written for a monologue into my stand-up act. Like they're just not stand-up jokes generally. Mm. Even the monologue jokes that are told by stand-ups on a late night show, they're just not good enough to be a stand-up standalone joke. It's just like, oh, it's topical and he's corny and it's a charming.
Yeah. Right.
It's not like it's a very different style of joke than I would typically write, but I'm still better at that than, you know,
other stuff.
Field piece stuff.
Right. So what's your typical stand-up writing style? Do you set time in the day to write or when stuff comes to you?
No, I mean, I have to do that for like writing packets and stuff like that. But I have my phone on me at all times and I keep a Google Doc that is synced up with my computer and everywhere, all the other devices I have.
Mm-hmm.
And if something occurs to me throughout the day, for whatever reason, I'll type it in like a little note into my document. And then when I go to like an open mic or a show later, I'll ask this like, oh, what am I working on right now? And it's like, oh yeah, this idea. And then I'll work it out on stage. I don't like sit down and write it beat for beat necessarily.
Did you ever do that?
Yeah. When I first started, I think I wrote out word for word and it just doesn't translate. I've still not necessarily known, like I'm not able to anticipate the exact wording I'll be able to use until it comes naturally to me on stage speaking through a microphone.
Yeah. I'm pretty much the same way.
Yeah.
Well, we are coming up to the end. This is kind of the typical questions we ask. What is the worst show you've ever done?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I did a show opening for a ventriloquist in Hartford, Connecticut. And it was like, it was just a terrible weekend all around because it was the club and,
So you did the whole weekend?
The whole weekend.
Wasn't just one show?
No, it was a whole weekend. It was the worst weekend of my life. And, like, he was a nice guy, and, like, he's proficient as a ventriloquist. But it was also right around the time when Jeff Dunham was huge, so all these ventriloquists were getting a lot more comedy stage time.
Yeah.
And not just the lack of overall audience, but the kind of audience that would come to
see.
Seems
like it's a lot of moms and aunts that would be at that
show.
Yeah,
and grandmas, and just like, wow, finally comedy for us.
Yeah.
And I am not that.
Right.
They're not my target demographic for what I talk about. Not that I wouldn't be okay with those people being a general audience. I just don't want them being my entire audience.
Yeah.
So I just never connected with them. I felt like crap the whole weekend.
How long did you do?
Like, I think I was emceeing, so probably like 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
But like, I just would go on and eat it some more and then bring up the feature act. I'd go back. I was like, hey, remember me? How you hated me? Well, I'm back. And then also this fucking puppet guy.
Yeah.
Sorry for using the F word.
Have you performed with the puppet guy since?
No.
No. Have you been back to that club?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was a New England club, so I'd go there every like 6 months or whatever.
Okay. So they didn't ban you after that.
Mm-mm.
It wasn't that bad.
Believe me, I was scared they were going to because that's how bad it was.
Oh, wow. What's the best show you've ever had?
Same club, different weekend. I opened for, Greg Giraldo.
Okay.
Rest in peace. He was great. He was one of my favorites. He was like, my hero, and I was opening for him and the guy that would eventually become my roommate. Jesse, who like was also a headliner at the time as well, but was opening for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I that weekend, cause Greg is terrific and had this great audience at the same club and it was just really electric. The whole audience was like on board with him and like that style. And so like I had not only got to perform with one of my heroes, but like, you know, got to do pretty well because they were a cool audience.
How long ago was this?
That was like 2008.
Okay.
Seven or eight. So like, yeah, like 7 years ago.
Oh, wow. So you haven't hit that peak since.
Oh, I mean, it was just, like, I've had great shows since then, but, like, that was the first, like, there's nothing going to top that until, like, I headline, you know, whatever, Carnegie Hall. Like, to be able to have a weekend like that was pretty special.
That's good. It was good. Well, I'm glad you came in. I hope it was an enjoyable experience for you.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
Where can people find you?
You can go to my website, johnozale.com. It has my show schedule, on it and clips. And, Twitter, I'm at johnozale, J-O-N-O-Z-A-L-A-Y. And then my, podcast is called Universe City. It's on iTunes and Stitcher or whatever the Android app is for it. Yeah, so all those places.